The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, March 23rd, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Jesko. And Chet, we've got a lot to talk about tonight. We're going to talk some March Madness. We're going to talk Phillies with our special guest, the voice of the Phillies, Tom McCarthy. Tom, welcome.
Guys, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for being here, Tom.
All right. Hey, Tom, many fans may not know that you've been also been broadcasting basketball season as well as the NCAA tournament. And I just wanted to ask you what it's like as a neutral observer, although you're a huge sports fan to begin with, but to be part of something that may be considered right up there with the greatest of all time. In this case, the Texas A&M 12-point comeback in the final 44 seconds of the round two game that eventually won in double overtime. Let's take a listen to you right quick on that clip.
71-69, and now Northern Iowa has to inbound the basketball with 11.8 to play. Jesperson will inbound, gets it to Washman. Double-teamed immediately, tries to get through the double-team. He's caught in the corner. He's going to get a violation. He gets it into the hands of Gilder of Texas A&M, who lays it in! He ties it at 71 with 1.9 to play! Oh, man!
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Great stuff. What's it like to be part of,
of
something like that, Tom?
Well, it was unbelievable. I mean, first of all, you know, I felt for the kids from Northern Iowa because they played so well. And really were the better team. I mean, they truly were. You know, it was funny. They were up 12 with about 30, I think it was 33 seconds to play. And I said to P.J. Carlesimo, my partner, I said, P.J., on the air, I said, I just don't think Texas A&M has enough time. And he said, Tom, they do not. The only way Texas, and I'm paraphrasing, the only way Texas A&M can win this game is if Northern Iowa just hands them the basketball each time. And that's essentially what happened. It was it was remarkable. I felt for the kids from Northern Iowa. You know, somebody asked me today, I was doing a radio show out in Boise, Idaho, and they said, when did you think Texas A&M was going to win? And I said, right there. That's when I thought they were going to win. I said, other than that, I just assumed Northern Iowa would get the ball in one more time and just run the rest of the clock off.
Boy, Northern Iowa really gave you some great highlight reel stuff in both of their games. Of course, on Friday, they won with the last-second heave from midcourt. Now, the Sunday night game, Tom, I'm just wondering, that A&M last-minute comeback, where does that rank among personal broadcasting memories for you?
You know, that's interesting. My wife was asking me about that because not that she follows everything that I do, but, you know, when I was telling her about it the next day, she said, wow, that had to be exciting. She said, have you ever done anything like that? I said, no, I said, I can't say that I have. I did so many good games with Princeton and so many games with St. Joseph's in basketball. Those would probably still be ahead of that. But from a historical standpoint, it's hard to match that. I mean, because as a broadcaster, you just want to do really good games. You want to do the best games. So that was a great lesson in concentration because, you know, I very rarely say this game is over when there's time on the clock. And I kind of said that, and it was a lesson to me not to do that again because you never know what can happen when there's still time on the clock. But I would think that's got to be top five. I mean, I had one last year, Georgia State, the game-winning shot where the coach fell off the chair, and I thought that was going to be difficult to duplicate. Yeah, but this was pretty sweet. This was pretty sweet.
Tom, now you're back in Philly this week for the regionals at the Wells Fargo Center. A couple of pretty good Friday evening matchups, Notre Dame, Wisconsin, and Indiana against top seed North Carolina. What's the outlook there?
Well, you know, I think the Wisconsin, I'm interested to see what Wisconsin does and how they try to slow down Notre Dame. because I think Notre Dame's a better team. But Wisconsin, you know, went to the championship game last year. They don't have a thousand guys back from that team, but they got a, you know, they got a decent amount of guys back from that team. Their freshmen have played very well this year. And, you know, I want to see what style they come out, because they have a chance to win that, even though I think Notre Dame's a better team. The other game could be the best game of the weekend. I mean, and I know it's hard to say that, but on paper, you know, Indiana and North Carolina could be the best game of the weekend. I mean, Duke Oregon's going to be a good game, but that could be the best game of the weekend. I'm excited about it, because potentially the matchup of Yogi Ferrell as one guard against Marcus Page, the other guard for North Carolina, that to me could be pretty special if they come out the way I think they're going to come out.
Well, Tom, Villanova makes it to the Sweet 16 by playing dominating basketball in both the first two rounds. They play Miami tomorrow night. What do you like there, and how far can the Cats go if they can win tomorrow?
Well, there are two keys, I think, for that game. I mean, Ochefu is the biggest key, because Miami is bigger than some of the teams that Villanova has faced so far in the NCAA tournament. So that's going to be important, I think. The other key is, can they keep shooting the three the way they've shot the three? I mean, their three-point shooting has been outstanding in the first couple of games of the tournament. And talking to Jay right at the start of the year, that was one of the concerns that he had, you know, because he was allowing them to just fire threes. And he said, I'm going to pair them back eventually. But let's face it, the only way they won their two games is because they shot the three well. So that to me is going to be important, is Ochefu against the bigs for Miami, because they're really talented. Can they quiet down Davon Reed, the Ewing kid, and can they shoot the three? I mean, that's going to be ultimately the most important thing.
Yep. All right, Tom, let's turn our attention now to the Phillies. For the most part, the Phillies have played some surprisingly good ball down in Florida this month. They're 14-6 currently. And I know spring training games don't matter, the results especially, but still, that's got to be good to see from these young guys, right?
I think it's great. I do agree that you have to look at spring training games. If you ask me in 08 or 09, I would say they don't matter, and they went on to go to the World Series. I do think it matters a little bit more for a younger team, only because they're figuring Pete Maccannon out, and they're also figuring themselves out. You know, there's still a lot of issues, obviously. You know, who's going to play the outfield is one of the biggest issues, although I think Odubel will be fine, so he'll be in center. I think Goodell will be in left or right, and I think Borges will be in left or right. It's the extra outfielders that I think we're not totally sure about right now. And then who will be the closer? I think it's going to be Andrew Bailey. But, you know, do they give David Hernandez another chance before the end of spring training? They might, you know, just to see what he can do. But it's been good. I think it's been very good. I think it's been a light atmosphere. It's been a comfortable clubhouse. I think it's totally different than it was last year when they were sort of in the same boat as far as the youth movement goes.
Hey, Tom, I read a thing just today where Pete Maccannon has implemented a fine system for his players, 50 cents for an error and so forth, but everybody has to pay, all part of team building. And I think that's an interesting approach. And as you say, it's such a young team that we'll have to see how that works out.
Yeah, well, he started doing that when he was in the minor leagues. I've known Pete since 94 when he was the manager of the Bowie Bay Sox when they used to play the Thunder, and he started doing that even before, you know, the minor leagues. It used to be that he would find the kids a quarter, and then everybody would have to pay the quarter. So it's not an astronomical amount, but at least keeps them focused and understanding of what he's trying to do, what he wants them to do from an execution standpoint. He wants to make sure that they understand that this game has to be played right in order for them to be successful, because there's a very small margin of error for this team, as you guys know, because of where they are right now in this rebuild. Pete Maccannon is as light a manager as I have been across. I mean, Charlie was light, but Pete is even lighter as a manager. He keeps it loose. He can be firm when he needs to. I think he's done a very good job, and I hope this is successful for him, because you won't meet a nicer guy who has an unbelievable wife. He's just a really good guy, and I think he's smart enough to understand what all of this is for him right now.
Yeah, I'd love to see him succeed. Now, T-Mac, I remember a year ago at this time you telling us you were excited about watching Odubel Herrera's rookie season.
Yeah.
It turned out pretty well. So who are you looking forward to watching the most this season?
Well, I'm excited about seeing him again because he's bigger, he's stronger. I think he's going to be a star. I really do. I think it sounds strange to say it for a Rule 5 kid, but I think he's got a chance to be a star. Obviously, Franco and his evolution has been great. I think that he is, you know, he's obviously the real deal, and he's unbelievably exciting to watch play. I think the other kids is just Aaron Nola pitching in a full season. Jared Eichhoff pitching in a full season. Velasquez potentially pitching in a full season in the big leagues. Velasquez is different than anything the Phillies have. You know, he's a 96 guy from inning one to inning nine. They don't have that in their rotation, and he's got a chance to be a pretty special pitcher. So I'm excited about seeing that. I mean, it's limited right now because the young kids are going to be down in the minor leagues, but I am excited to see some of these pitchers and what they're able to do.
Well, you and I are certainly on board with Odubel because I've been saying all last year or since mid-year I thought he was going to be a star as well. Now, Jeremy Hellickson, his name
is funny, too.
He's funny?
Yeah, he's funny. He's just a funny kid. He's just a really good kid. He doesn't really understand English all that well, but when you do get him and you are able to talk to him, some of the stuff that comes out of his mouth is hysterical.
Great. Well, hopefully he stays that way. Hey, Jeremy Hellickson's going to be on the hill for the opener. Aaron Nola looks like he's scheduled for the home opener. Does that surprise you any, or you think that's all by plan?
No, I think that's all by plan. I think they wanted to have Nola start the home opener. So in order to do that, I think this was really the only way to do it. Hellickson has pitched really well. And, you know, it's a great honor for that pitcher to be able to do that. I mean, it is essentially just game number one, but it is a great honor for them to do that. I think this is by design. I think this is what they wanted to do. And I think it's good. I think, not that Aaron Nola feels pressure even a little bit, because he doesn't. But I think this is good to let Hellickson, you know, deal with game number one and everything that surrounds it. And then after that, Nola will go and then eventually be able to get the excitement of pitching. And I think it's good for the Phillies fans to have him pitch the home opener so they can sort of, you know, get a chance to get a glimpse of what they think is the ace for the future.
Very good. Well, Tom, we're short on time tonight because you have a NCAA call here in just a minute, but just a couple things I did want to ask you. One is, you're everywhere. You do football, you do college basketball, you do the Phillies.
Yeah.
How many games a year do you actually broadcast live?
You know, it's funny. We were talking about this the other day with some of my buddies from CBS because they were asking at the tournament. You figure we probably do 180 baseball games a year, although this year I did less because the Phillies allowed me to go do the NFL in September. So, you figure, let's say 175, you throw in, 17 or 18, actually it's 17 football games. So that's 192. And then it's about 35 basketball games. So I didn't realize it until I counted. I guess it's about 230 events a year. I love it. During the baseball offseason, most of my games are drivable. You know, I let's say if I have a Tuesday night game in Philadelphia, well, I go to shoot around and then I do the game and I come home. So I'm home the rest of the week, which is great because then I can catch up with my family. I just love doing games. You know, I just think it makes you better as a broadcaster. It makes you sharp. You get different opportunities to interview people. You get different opportunities to call different games. And I just think it makes you a better broadcaster. And I've been really lucky. I've been really lucky to be able to do what I've been able to do over the course of my career.
Well, here's to a good season, Tom.
Tom,
yeah,
we appreciate
so,
you coming to us, getting with us, and hopefully we get to do it again sometime. And go Phils.
Yeah, look forward to it. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, T-Mac. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, Jed. Well, we had to regroup, didn't even get a chance to tell our listeners that we were going to have to make some modifications. We just found out about 10 minutes till 7 or 5 minutes to 7 that Tom had a 7:15 conference call with the NCAA, which it's hard to believe that trumped what we have. Let's go.
It is hard to believe. But you know what? He just found out a little while ago, so we were glad to have him.
Absolutely, and he's got great stuff. He's a great guy, and I really enjoy him. But hey, let's get back on track a little bit. And I cut this out, but I certainly wanted to say to you, great job on last week's show, along with our special guest Mike Kern, and and our buddy Switch, Steve Swickowitz, for his last minute emergency replacement job covering for me last week. And Mike had some very interesting things to say about March Madness before it ever got started. And as it turned out, he wasn't far off. It was a bizarre basketball weekend.
I'll tell you, Mike was terrific in his first visit to a Philly Press Box Radio, and it was great to have him on to talk hoops and the Philly sports scene in general. And, yeah, I mean, every year there's upsets in March Madness, but, boy, some of the ones this past weekend, just incredible. And it's a shame that, you know, T-Mac didn't get any exciting games to call, the poor guy. But, yeah, what fun. I mean, you know, last-minute game winners, 12-point comebacks in the final minute, you know, double-digit seeds upsetting 4 and 5 seeds. So, yeah, that's why they call it March Madness.
Yeah, well, you know, I wonder who in the world came up with that term March Madness. And, you know, hopefully they trademarked that thing because they have sure hit it on
did.
The nose.
Yeah, they did.
Well,
hey, by the way,
as long as it wasn't CBS.
Right. By the way, we didn't have time to play it because we were, you know, pressed for time, but play that clip of Tom calling the end of the Northern Iowa-Texas game, the round one game from Friday, because first of all, it was an exciting game. Second of all, it was a great call by Tom, and I want our listeners to hear it on Westwood One.
Here we go.
Bohannon will inbound, gets it to Jesperson from midcourt, lets it fly. It is good! He makes it home! Jesperson is wanted for Northern Iowa! 75-72 at the buzzer! The Panthers advance.
Wasn't that great?
It was. And you know, the great thing about calls, both of his calls here, is these are like historical, iconic calls, certainly in Northern Iowa. They'll be listening to Tom McCarthy when they're our grandkids, you know. It's going to go on forever. It's really cool. And you know, I guess as we've gotten to know T-Mac just a little bit, he is as big a fan as you and I and everybody else that's listening. He's not working ball games to work ball games. He's a sports fan just like we are.
I love that call because you not only hear him, you know, say it was the final seconds, but then you hear the horn, and then I think you hear the ball actually hitting the backboard because it was, you know, from so far away. So I mean, you got it all. And then, of course, you know, Tom's call was just great. So but that one is one for the save file for sure.
Absolutely. Well, hey, let's get our trivia question out here, Chet. Or we'll get warmed up for it anyway. We're going to ask it at 7:29, but let's be sure that our listeners know the trivia question will be out 7:29. It's going to be a signed 8x10 color photo of Phillies Wiz Kids pitcher Kurt Simmons, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call in and correctly answer that trivia question. Write down this number so you have it at 7:29. It's 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. And just a hint, a little hint, Chet, the answer will have to do with the discussion we just had with T-Mac.
Okay.
Might even be as simple as what games is he calling this weekend, but we'll see if
you
were paying
know.
Attention out there.
Stay tuned.
And by the way, the Kurt Simmons autograph from Carl's was just in that private signing that Carl Henderson did with Kurt. And so it's fresh and good and a great picture too. You see where I posted it and Carl did too on Facebook of what the picture is that we'll be giving away. So looking forward to that. All right, Chet, before we move on to talk some more Phillies and Flyers and so forth, let's get ahead of ourselves and, because I'm really excited about this, and since we're talking basketball and Final Four, I want to let our listeners know about next week's show, because, as you know, I'm super excited about our special guest. Well, I'm excited about all our guests, but what a way to lead into the Final Four National Championship weekend to have a national champion himself on the show. Philadelphia high school basketball legend from Overbrook High and UCLA national championship, having played for Coach John Wooden, Andre McCarter will be our guest. Chet, I cannot wait.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I mean, we're going to be talking to a guy who played for John Wooden, who is widely considered the greatest college coach of all time. Some people might say Coach K, but I'm sticking with John Wooden. And I'm sure Andre will, you know, talk about what brought him to UCLA from Philly, you know, playing for Coach Wooden. And also, of course, get Andre's insight into the Final Four, which, who knows, just maybe will include Villanova.
Yeah, and you know, the thing about Andre back when he left Philly to go out to UCLA back in the day, he was right up there, and I was a young kid, you know, but he was right up there with the Wilt Chamberlains and the Guy Rogers and the Walt Hazards and those kind of guys who were considered the greatest players to ever come out of Philadelphia high school basketball. We're talking about a guy that could flat out play.
Yeah, he was a good one.
So looking forward to that an awful lot. It's there's going to be so much to talk about, and I'm sure our 25 minutes with him is just going to fly by.
Mm-hmm.
I could talk to him for 2 or 3 hours just about Coach Wooden, since I am a diehard, crazy John Wooden kind of fan.
Hey, getting back to basketball, you know, the basketball expert that I am, as you may have heard me say with Mike Kern, I had Michigan State winning it all, so that didn't work out. My bracket, of course, got busted pretty much that Friday, the second day of all the action. How about you? Did any of your teams survive?
Actually, I have Kansas. I still had Kansas as the number one team, but I did certainly have Michigan State in there. I had North Carolina in there. Who was the fourth one? They lost. I don't remember. They're long gone. They were gone early, but
yeah.
So I'm okay with North Carolina, and I'm still okay with Kansas. But Michigan State was, I thought they'd be right there in the final.
Yeah, a lot of people did, including Mike Kern. So you just never know. My modest goal for this year was to finish in the top half of the competition that I'm in. I'm in this bracket with a whole bunch of guys that I used to work with and various other people, and I think there are 112 people in it this year. So my goal was to finish in the top 50, and right now I'm 47th. So it's going to be close.
There you go. There you go. Well, you know what? It's better than being in the bottom 50.
Yes, it is.
All right. Well, hey, Jet, let's get our commercial break out of the way to our advertisement, and we'll get that done. And then once we get through our trivia, we'll start talking Flyers. We'll talk some Eagles. We'll talk a little more Phillies, and we'll even talk about your Philadelphia 76ers.
If we must.
All right. Well, let's thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network for the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, hey, Chet, we had a request from our buddy John Roberts, Big John Roberts, that is, to talk a little bit about the rules and the new rules that were passed the other day by the competition committee. And to be honest with you, a couple of these things are a little bizarre to me. The chop block, for one, is no longer allowed, and I'm perfectly fine with that. But the one that I thought was a little bit interesting is, you know, the horse collar rule. Okay, we know what the horse collar is, right? You grab them by the back, and that's a horse collar.
Yeah, the top of the jersey in the back.
That is no longer the rule. The rule is now, if the defender grabs the jersey at the nameplate, pulls a runner down toward the ground. So, you know, how many guys get tackled up around the shoulders or up around that nameplate, and we say, well, he didn't grab his neck. Well, now the nameplate is a penalty as well.
Yeah, I'm not sure that I like that one.
I'm not sure that I like that one. I like that one. No,
because, I mean, the guys are moving, you know, pretty much at top speed when they're getting tackled. And as a defender, you've got to think quickly to make sure that your hand, you know, is closer to the guy's waist or the middle of his back rather than up around the shoulders. And sometimes that's hard to do. And if the guy that you're trying to tackle, you know, ducks at the last second or whatever, you know, you're going to get him up closer to the neck. So, boy, I don't know. I know it's all about safety and all of that, but some of these things are just going to be really, really hard on defenders. And it's going to be tough on the officials, too, to make decisions sometimes. So I don't like that one.
I don't either. How about this one? Disqualifies a player who is penalized twice in one game for certain types of unsportsmanlike conduct fouls.
I'm okay with that one.
I don't know what certain type means.
Yeah, I think this has to do with the Odell Beckham thing with the guy from Carolina last year. I think it stems from that. I mean, if anybody's going to get two personal fouls in a game, you know, that's a problem. So you get one, you calm down, and you make sure you don't do something wrong to get that second one. So I'm okay with that one.
Well, I guess where I'm a little confused on that is if I get a personal foul for a late hit, and then I get a personal foul for taunting or something, does that get me ejected? And I would think they've left enough leeway here to say certain types, but what are the rules? You know,
I'm sure the officials and the players will be advised as far as what qualifies as a type of personal foul that's going to get you disqualified if it happens twice.
Right, right. All right, touchbacks are now at the 25-yard line instead of the 20-yard line.
Boy, I don't know about that one either. There's so much geared toward helping the offense out. Now you're going to give them another 5 yards. But I don't know. I like the way it was. Keep it at the 20. Don't give them that extra 5 yards. No.
I'm with you. If anything, I'd gone back 5 yards. Make the offense move the ball further. You know, because you're right. All the rules are set up for the offense. I am with you. I don't either. How about this one? Eliminate the 5-yard penalty for an eligible receiver illegally touching a forward pass after being out of bounds and reestablishing himself in bounds, and makes it a loss of down.
I wasn't aware of that one. Loss of down instead of 5-yard penalty.
See, to me, this is a crazy rule because it came up last year when, I didn't even think you were allowed to do it last year, and all of a sudden it started in that one college weekend, and then it seemed like it was happening every weekend, and guys were running out of bounds, running back in bounds, catching touchdowns every week. But I guess the way this reads is it's no longer a penalty, and it's a loss of down instead of a penalty. Interesting.
Well, it's still a penalty, but the penalty is it's a loss of down instead of the yardage, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay. I don't know. I'm gonna have to do a little more research on that one. Have my team study that one.
Yep. And here's one. The last one we'll look at makes it a foul for delay of game timeout when it is not permitted to do so. And I'm trying to understand when that. How often does that even really occur? That
yeah, it doesn't happen often. But you got to know how many timeouts you have. So.
Well, I was wondering, is that what they're trying to say, that when you're calling it when you don't have one, or are they trying to call it at times where it's not allowed?
I don't know, but
remember when they would be.
Yeah, but I'm assuming it's when you're out of them, but you still call a timeout, and then the official's going to blow the whistle for whatever reason. So, yeah, I think you got to know how many timeouts you have, and if you try to get one, or at least get the official to blow the whistle and haul things, you're going to get a little penalty for that. So I'm okay with that.
Now, and one final one I do want to throw out here. It almost slipped over me here because I think this is really important to the game. Permits offensive and defensive play callers on the coaching staffs to use the coach-to-player communication system regardless of whether they are on the field or in the coach's booth. So that, to me, is a big, big deal because now the guy that's going to be talking to the quarterback or the middle linebacker is the eye in the sky. It's not going to be the sidelines. It's going to be that guy that can see the whole entire field.
Well, I'm okay with that. I mean, it's an age of technology, and, you know, why not? Does it really matter where the calls are coming from?
Well, I mean, as long as it's equal, probably not. But But like you say, the worst seat in the house, and I've had both, the worst seat in the house is on the sidelines.
Yeah,
the best
true.
Seat in the house is sitting in that press box.
Yeah, so it kind of makes sense then.
Yep, so the rules are the rules. They're modifying things a little bit, and nothing earth-shaking. We'll
and
see
they're
how it
they're
plays
also, out. They're also keeping the 33-yard extra point, the 15-yard line for extra points, making it a 33-yarder. So
yes.
That's fine.
Yes, absolutely. And actually, that little tweak of a rule made a big difference this year. There were a lot more misses.
Oh, absolutely. That's what they wanted.
That's right. Okay, well, let's jump back and get our trivia question. We're right about on time. As we mentioned, our prize is a signed 8x10 color photo a Phillies Whiz Kids pitcher, Kurt Simmons, courtesy of Carl's Cards. So if you were listening to the T-Mac interview, you know this answer. Here we go. How many games per year did Tom McCarthy estimate he broadcasts per year? That's all sports included. He told you the number. He actually did the math for you. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. All right, Chet, while our listeners are, they can't even look that one up. That's not even a Google question right there.
Right.
While they're thinking about what they said or rerunning the show, let's talk some Flyers hockey. Man, what a bad sting last night at the hands of the Columbus Blue Jackets. Holy cow.
You know, Bill, I was all set last night to tweet something out about another huge win for the orange and black, and then there was that big meltdown in the last 75 seconds. Two goals by Columbus to erase the Flyers' 2-0 lead, and the first one came while the Flyers were on the power play, for crying out loud. It was just shocking, and as I texted you while we watched, once it got to the shootout, you pretty much knew they were doomed and would have to settle for 1 point. So, yeah, that one really, really hurt, especially considering how well Steve Mason played with, what, 51 or 52 saves, whatever he had. He played great. I couldn't fault him on either of the two goals. He actually played well during the shootout, too. I mean, he just gave up that one. The Flyers, of course, couldn't get anything in the extra period, the shootout. So, tough loss. They got 1 point, but they should have had two.
Yeah, and geez, you know, I'm with you. You know how I put out the little Gene Hart thing and all that, and with the score of the game. And I swear, every time I do this, something bad happens. I already had it all ready to go, ready to push send.
Yep.
At two nothing. I was like, holy cow! And you know, fortunately, the Red Wings came down to Tampa and took a spanking. So. The Flyers are still tied with the Red Wings for that last spot with a game in hand.
Right.
So they're still in okay shape, but boy, you just hate to leave that one point sitting there that was yours to have.
Yep, 11 games left, and I mean, you don't have to win them all, so I can't say that each game is a must win, but you certainly want to win as many of those as you possibly can, because you got to think Detroit's going to start playing better at some point. I don't know. My question is, why the heck are they so bad in shootouts? I think that I heard there's something like 32-70 all time now in shootouts. That ain't good.
It's not good. And actually, when they went to shootout last night, Jim Jackson even said, like, oh, like the death of this organization forever. It's not this
team.
Yeah,
the bane of our existence, I think he said.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And you know, it's funny how many guys have changed hands and how many guys have shot shots over that period of time. And it certainly, as you said, wasn't on Mason, but doggone, you couldn't get a goal. They could still be playing and not get a goal.
Yeah, they got to practice those shootouts more than they already do. I know they say they practice them, but it sometimes doesn't look like it because, you know, some of the guys are just, I don't know, they're just kind of going straight ahead, maybe trying a little deke, but I think they can do better. And, I mean, sometimes the guys they choose to take part in the shootouts, didn't, like, Nick Cousins or somebody handle the first one last night? I mean, shouldn't you have the big guys doing them right away, Giroux and the other guys who can score, Braden Schenn, you know? I don't get it.
Yeah, well, they do that in some sort of a rotation. I don't know exactly how they do it, but, like, last night, Voracek never shot, right?
Right.
Bear never shot.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's a rhyme or reason to how they do that. I just don't know what it is. But
and here's
hey,
my other question. Wait, one other question. Why the heck does Columbus always seem to give the Flyers loads of trouble? I think they've beaten them 7 or 8 times in a row now, and Columbus isn't that good. So what is it about Columbus that causes the Flyers so many fits?
Well, you know what I saw last night that I really didn't like besides the final score? It was
that
Columbus took the body to the Flyers all night long, and the Flyers didn't have any answer to that. And
they got 54 shots or whatever, too.
Yes, they did, and they pretty much outplayed the Flyers in that game to begin with, but the Flyers, you know, when they scored that second goal, it looks like they were safe. The Flyers are playing outstanding defensively. It looked like all was good, but, you know, you just make one mistake. The icing the icing call against Wayne Simmons, when all he really needed to do was pass and rag the puck, ended up haunting them. Or they probably win that game. I mean, it happens. But how about our man Scott Hartnell? He was mixing it up in the middle of everything. He didn't get that elusive 300th career goal, fortunately, against the Flyers. But old Hartsy made himself known again.
Oh yeah, it's always good to see him. You know, I'd still rather have him on my team than RJ Umberger.
Oh yeah. That's a given. That's a given. Hey, now let's drop back a little bit. The night before, they played the Islanders and played lights out, played really well, had a shutout there. And then they go back Saturday to play Pittsburgh in a game that everybody is fired up about, as long as you weren't in skates. And because the guys in skates forgot they had a game. And they've got a few more matches left with the Penguins, and they've got to be better than that.
Yeah, they do. I think they have, 2 left with them still? And they could matter. Well, every game is going to matter now, probably. They also have 1 key game with the Islanders. I'll forgive the Flyers for Saturday's loss to Pittsburgh. The Penguins have been playing really, really, really well of late. And, you know, they want to continue to improve their playoff seeding. They were fighting for a playoff spot themselves just a couple of weeks ago, and now they're, you know, in the top 3 in the division, so they look to be safe. But, I'll live with that one. Just got to hope for a better effort by the Flyers when they meet Pittsburgh the next 2 times over these final 11 games.
Well, how do you feel? Because you flip-flopped more than anybody on this, and I actually joined you a little bit. What do you think about Steve Mason being the mule here that's going to have to carry this team into the playoffs? You good?
Yeah, he's starting to win me over. He's played very well of late. I mean, the last couple of games, he's been fantastic. I know they're probably going to give him a rest at some point and play Stolarz, the young guy, big young guy, because they have some back-to-backs ahead. I think they finished the season with 4 games in 5 nights, as a matter of fact. So, you know, even if you're fighting for a playoff spot, that's going to wear Mason out, especially if they're going to give up 50 shots in a game like they did last night. So, yeah, Mason, though, has looked really, really good. He made some incredible saves the last 2 nights. So he's starting to win me over, and I'm okay with him down the stretch as long as he keeps playing like that, that's for sure.
Well, I'm with you. He has played really well, and they could have been beat up pretty early in both of those games the last 2 nights if it were not for him.
And one other thing we didn't talk about. We talk about Shane Gostisbehere almost every show that we do, it seems. How about that play he made last night in overtime when he dove like a shortstop, knocked the puck down with his hands, and then got a pass off to Wayne Simmons, who had a shot at winning the game? What a play that was to save that from going offsides.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely fantastic play. And you know, the thing I like, not even that it's Gostisbehere as much, but that's the effort that Dave Haxtell's getting out of these guys. And, you know, as the game progressed on, they were talking about the effort by Giroux, and that Giroux is playing lights out still. And the fourth line, you know, they talked about them guys all night. Ryan White's got 10 goals as a fourth liner.
Yeah.
You know, I think Haxtell is bringing out, or his system is bringing out, or all of that, the best in a lot of players. It's a bright future.
Yep, it sure is. I mean, and plus what we're hearing about these guys down on the farm, you know, Provorov and what's the other one? The forward, Travis Konecny, is that his name?
Oh yeah, yeah, Konecny.
He
scored his 100th point.
Yeah, they are like lights out down there. So I expect to see both of those guys with the big club next year, and the Flyers will be a team to be reckoned with for sure.
Yep. Well, hey, I wanted to switch over. Well, before we do that, I want to hit you with something with the Eagles, but let's get this trivia question out there because it's about as simple as it could be. And we did have somebody come up on the board here, and then they jumped off. Maybe they got scared of their question, or maybe they're scared of you, Chet. I don't know.
That's probably it. Mm-hmm.
All right, but the question was, how many games per year did Tom McCarthy estimate he broadcasts? Okay, and that was live broadcast baseball, football, basketball games. And he did the math, and he gave the number. So it's 929-477-2855 to answer that. Hey, Chad, I wanted to jump over real quick, and I guess this is kind of the Eagles or a backhanded Eagles or whatever, but I found it interesting that Chip Kelly decided he wanted to talk today, and he talked about the Eagles. And immediately, the Philly media and social media took off on crushing our man Howie again. I found that very interesting. I don't, you know, I'm being accused of being a fan favorite of Howie, which I have no. I wouldn't care if they got rid of Howie today, but I just find it interesting that there's so much still regard by a lot of people for Chip Kelly.
Yeah, and it's not just that. I think it's just part of the dislike for Howie Roseman. A lot of people think that he's kind of a weasel, a backstabber. And even though, you know, Chip doesn't exactly seem to be the most personable guy out there, a lot of people feel even worse about Howie Roseman. And so people just want to know exactly how it all went down. You know, who was calling the shots the last few years? What happened at the end of the 2014 season when, you know, Chip got elevated to not the GM, but whatever the GM duties he acquired were? How he got demoted, although they called it a promotion, although he was demoted. Everybody wants to know exactly what went down. They want to know who was calling the shots in terms of, you know, going out and getting DeMarco Murray and all these other guys. At this point, I got to be honest, I don't really care anymore. I just want to move on. I wish Howie the best as far as he's done a great job over the last month. Now I want to see him do well in the draft. And let's just forget about the past. I don't care about what happened with him and Chip anymore. Just drop it.
I am 100% with you. Let's move on and let's win some football games and go in the right direction. And because what are we going to dig out of that if we find a dead body? You know, there's nothing to be gained.
And we just might.
That's right. All right. Hey, we have a caller, hopefully to answer our trivia question. Who do we have on the line tonight?
Well, this would be your Philly Press Box champion.
Danny B.
That would be correct. Danny, see, everybody,
we had to give you a couple opportunities to think your way through this, or Google.
Yeah, well, there's no
Google for this one.
Obviously, there's no Googling on this one, and I probably would have been better off if you had asked something that happened 30 years ago, rather than 30 minutes ago, because
I'm the same way.
My short-term memory just isn't that great. So I'm going to really have to guess at the question.
All right.
I know it's between – maybe I get points for this, but I'm pretty sure. I think I was actually walking over to the fridge to get another Corona when he tallied it up. So I kind of heard something from a distance, but it was somewhere between 2 and 300.
Well, that's a wide margin. That's a little bit too wider than even Chet could give up.
Okay, all right. I'm gonna take a guess. I think 236.
Is that close enough, Chet?
Right.
You know, in all honesty, I didn't hear the final number that he gave. So I was checking my notes on some other questions, and I heard him saying, well, it was like 175, and then I didn't hear his final answer. So
well,
I'm going to have to rely on you, Bill.
But that wasn't the total.
Right, I know.
The total. He added
I'm
something on
to
that.
You, Danny. I'm gonna make a ruling here, and I'm gonna say because you're not within five, we can't give it to you.
It's okay. I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that because Chet didn't even hear it, so it's okay.
Yeah, I missed it.
I wrote it down. That's the only reason I have it. So, but hey, Danny, we appreciate you anyway.
Sure. Hey, I got one question before I go. It's pertaining to the Flyers.
Okay.
Whether or not they make it to the playoffs this year or not, regardless of that, pertaining to the goalies, I know Mason's our guy now this year and everything, but going into next year, I don't know where they would get him from anyway, so I don't see him having another goalie. I think they're going to go into next year with these two guys. And either one of them, whether it's Mason or Nurse, I can't pronounce his name. Do you think that if we get a little bit, their defense has been playing pretty good, but I think they're going to get even better next year, especially if they bring up that kid, Ivan, the Russian,
Provorov.
Because he's been playing lights out, and I'm pretty sure they're going to bring him up. That's going to make their defense even better. So a two-part question, do you think with the defense, if it does get even better, which I think it will, what do you think the impact that kid will have? Do you think it'll be a huge impact? And two, if it is, do you think that will be enough for one of those goalies to be good enough to take us all the way, or not next year, but to be the guy, to be our guy.
From what I'm hearing,
great goalies aren't grown on trees. So
yeah. From what I'm hearing, both these kids are going to have a huge impact. Maybe not immediately, but certainly by the second year, and that's going to make the whole team better. And if you have a better defense, that's going to make the goalie look better as well. And from what I hear from Alan Morganti and others, this defenseman is an even better defenseman than Gostisbehere. And Gostisbehere is known
more for his offense.
So,
exactly.
I mean, that would be nice. And I'm okay with keeping Steve Mason if he's going to play like this. And the Flyers also drafted a couple of goalies over the last few years, and I haven't heard a whole lot about how they're doing. I'm not talking about Stolarz, the guy who's up now. I'm talking about some of the other guys they drafted over the last two or three years. So, maybe they'll get lucky and one of those guys will develop and be ready to come up either next year or the following year.
That's possible. Yeah, maybe so.
All right,
okay.
Danny.
Well, thanks a lot, fellas. Thanks
for
giving me a shot.
You got it. All right. Hey,
One more thing, Chet. You should have seen me standing beside the big C and Bill there at the baseball game the other day.
Yeah,
they
I was going to ask
the,
you how those they, guys how those guys behaved.
They behaved pretty well, and they looked like the Twin Towers on cellulite next to me. It was great meeting those guys. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it was a lot of fun.
It was.
All right, Danny.
All right. Thanks, Danny.
All right. Later,
Chet. Hey, Chet. We have another caller here. Jumped right on when Danny did not answer that correctly. Who we have?
Hey guys, how you doing? It's Adam.
Hey, Adam. What's up, buddy? You got the right answer for us.
I'm hoping so. 180.
180 is not correct either.
Dang.
I wish I heard the answer.
Well, I'm going to tell you the answer.
Two of us.
Well, I guess I can't tell the answer because we might get another call.
No, don't tell me yet. Don't tell me yet.
No.
I will tell you the first part because Danny had the 175 right. It was 175 baseball games.
Right.
That part was right.
That.
And then
I heard that.
And then it grew from there. So, well, Adam, we appreciate you, and maybe the next time.
Well, good luck to the next guy, and go Flyers.
Take care.
All right. Okay. All right. Hey, Chet, I wanted to, before it got away from us, I wanted to get a couple get-well wishes out there to three of our loyal listeners who have been battling some health issues recently. And, our buddy Frank Kolochny, he's been back and forth and trying to get right and hitting speed bump after bump and so forth, but bouncing around doing better. Eileen Waterman and Vicky Rossi, all three people who are loyal listeners to the Philly Press Box Radio since we got going, and they've all, we need them to be up on their feet running full speed, and we certainly appreciate their support.
Yeah, for sure. Get well soon, Frank, Eileen, and Vicky. And the same to you and your family, Bill, since you told me that you've all been battling flu-like symptoms in recent days. So I hope everybody's getting better down with you, your family.
Boy, we have had it. We've had it since Saturday, went right through and got everybody. And I can tell you, Monday and Tuesday, I spent in the bed myself, and but I feel like $1 million today, but I didn't feel so good the last two.
Well, hopefully you're on the road to recovery. Yes.
We certainly are. But hey, before we give the update to our signings at Carl's Cards, I did want to tell you, as Danny mentioned, I met Danny and his lovely bride down there at Clearwater at the Phillies game, along with Carl Henderson and Sue Henderson and some couple of Delaware County retired folks. Joe and Mary Stinger were there, met them for the first time. They're good friends with Carl and Sue, and met your buddy Mike Barnes and his beautiful wife, and Beth Fullerton, a Facebook friend and a daughter of former Philly shortstop Bobby Wine. I actually got to meet her, and funny, we recognized each other by walking by, seeing a Facebook picture of each other. Funny how that how that happens. And
nice.
One of my hometown Cottondale old friends went to school with his brother and sister, and John Foley stopped by to say hello. It was a real blast being at the ballpark on St. Patrick's Day and seeing a whole bunch of people.
Oh, I have no doubt. And I'm already making plans to make a return visit next year, longer than my two brief day and a half visit from earlier this month. I will definitely get back there next year, hopefully for, you know, like I say, 3 or 4 days.
Well, and don't ever let Carl Henderson fool you, Chet, when you see him. He knows just about everybody in the stadium.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
They know him. They know him.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
It was like standing with a legend. I thought I was with a rock star down there.
Yeah, we got to try to get Carl to come out of his shell one of these days.
Yes, we do. All right. Well, hey, with that said, let's get to the Carl's Cards and collectible signing updates. And it starts out with former Flyers Ray Allison and Terry Kartner in the store on April the 2nd. Eagles linebacker Jordan Hicks in the store on April the 9th. Carl has added Flyers first captain Lou Angotti, who will be in the store on April the 16th. And my all-time favorite Monsignor Bonner graduate and Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti in the store April the 23rd. NHL Hall of Famer Mark Howell and his brother Marty will be in the store May 21st. And a Father's Day treat, Brian Dawkins in the house on Saturday, June the 19th. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road, Havertown, PA. Or give Carl a call at 610-789-4996. And you can also visit the website carlscards.com. Contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. And Chet, another signing announcement for the Notre Dame fans out there. My buddy Chip Brady at Collectors Clubhouse in North Hanover Mall in Hanover, Pennsylvania, will have legendary Fighting Irish coach Lou Holtz in the store Saturday, March 26th. That's this Saturday, from 2 to 4. They'll also be doing mail order for those that can't make it out to Hanover. Contact Chip Brady at bradychip13@yahoo.com or give him a call at 717-968-6243 for details.
Tis the season for signings, I guess, Bill. I will also mention that our pal Swit has lined up a signing for legendary Flyer Dave the Hammer Schultz. Schultzy will be appearing at the Neshaminy Mall Sports Cards and Collectibles Show on Saturday, April 16th. That is from 1 till 2.
There you go. We got to love them Broad Street Bullies. They're everywhere.
Yep.
All right, Mr. Chesko. Well, we are pretty much on time tonight. Do you have a parting shot to close up with?
Sure. Even with pretty much everyone owning phones with cameras now and willing to post someone else's outrageous behavior on social media, we still often see adults losing their cool at their kids' sporting event, berating the kid's coach, going after a referee or umpire, sometimes even to the point of a physical confrontation. So I got a kick out of a sign that was shown on television and social media over the weekend, posted at a Little League field in Pleasanton, Texas. The sign is there for all visitors to see, and it's written as a set of rules with the headline, Reminders from Your Child. Those reminders include the following. I'm a kid. It's just a game. My coach is a volunteer. The officials are humans. And no college scholarships will be handed out today. Boy, that would be a great sign for almost every field or court, don't you think?
Yes, it would. Hey, and my parting shot, I'm going to go the other way because I am an irate fan today, but I'm irate at the college and professional level, and I've been on this rant at least one or 10 other times before. The officiating, Chet, the officiating stinks. Temple was eliminated on a call that anyone could make. A complete two-arm push-off to grab the basketball to put in the game-winning shot while the referee either decides to choke on his whistle or is not paying attention to his job in the last couple seconds of the game, and it costs the team a win. You turn around last night and you watch the Flyers in a clear shot that was a high stick. Not only did they get it wrong on the ice because of an indecisive referee who actually started to raise his arm to wave it off, they missed the review as well as the same and they did in the Temple game. The problem with this is not winning or losing one basketball game or one hockey game. It costs people jobs. And when you don't win, in a case of, say, Fran Dunphy, if you can't get out of that round and somebody decides, you know what, we've seen this one time too many, nobody is going to care that the referee swallowed his whistle. It's got to get better.
Hear, hear. And by the way, one other thing, Bill, shortly before airtime, we got word that we lost Joe Garagiola today. Decent ball player, but an even better, well-known broadcaster. Boy, I remember watching and listening to him do the NBC games, baseball games in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s. Joe Garagiola dead at age 90 today. So rest in peace, Joe.
Another one on the list, 2016, Chet.
Yeah.
All right. So we are at the top of the hour. Let's thank our special guest, Tom McCarthy, for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. And, Jet, do you want the T-Mac answer before we close the book tonight?
Yes, since I didn't really hear it, and I'm guessing it was over 200, but I don't know how many over 200.
Well, he did his math up to 227, and he said, so 230 events. 175 baseball, 17 football, and around 35 basketball, which came out to 227. So he said 230 events. So if Danny would have been between 225 and 230, I think he would have been a winner.
Wow, you are tough.
Well, What did Danny do to tick you off, Bill? Oh, not a thing. I like Danny. Especially since I met Danny. He's a good man, and
I can't figure out, he's
playing over his head, but that's a story for another day.
Oh, gosh. All righty.
All right. So for Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you'll join Philly Press Box Radio on Wednesday, March 30th at 7 p.m. with our special guest, Overbrook High School and UCLA national champion, Andre McCarter. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
It's Gene Hart. Good night. Good hockey.